All right. We're back. Appreciate everyone's patience. We're coming back on item number 12 on our agenda. That's item number Senate Bill 649 regarding wireless telecommunications facilities and small cells. Long story short, I'm going to turn right over to the chair of Energy. There was feedback from Energy Committee, which we've tried to address in governance and finance, which we'll get into here in just a bit. I do believe that the chair, Mr. Weisel, will talk about that, and I'll hold my comments at the end, but we welcome Mr. Weisel to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and as promised, that feedback was materialized into statute. So
we
appreciate working with your office, Senator, and I appreciate all your input in this process.
Thank you, sir.
It has been
grateful to work with you.
Lots and lots of hours later, here we are. But again, you know, jobs, ladies and gentlemen, in an environment where we're talking infrastructure, where infrastructure is on the tip of everybody's tongue, we have a historic opportunity today to advance hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, in digital infrastructure without spending a single taxpayer dollar. Like every economically competitive state and country in this world, California is in the midst of a wireless revolution, and it's in a race to maximize its access to next-generation wireless technology. You know, California is one of those states in leading the development in a lot of these technologies. It only makes sense that at the center of this global innovation economy, that California would be the host of unrolling one of the biggest networks in the latest technology for communications. Senate Bill 649 recognizes the public policy benefit and overwhelming consumer demand for greater, faster access, and establishes a reliable and standardized process for siting the physical infrastructure necessary to meet that demand. This new process is based on existing precedent. It preserves local decision-making authority and recognizes that technological advancement is like water, that a technology investment is like water, that it flows along a path of very low resistance. According to every economist, 5G wireless has the potential to be a game changer. And for California, to ensure the benefits of this innovation are reaching every community, not just our wealthiest urban centers, we must do all we can to promote its comprehensive build-out. The opportunity cost of not acting now is quite significant. Cloud computing, smart communities, distance learning, telemedicine, high-tech manufacturing, wireless streaming, driverless cars, all of that depends on next-generation wireless. And experts say the potential direct and indirect economic benefits to California communities measure in the billions, not millions, in the billions of dollars to our economy. And to add to that, the people of California, our constituents, really want this. A recent statewide poll shows two-thirds or greater support among Californians for upgrading and creating a statewide next-gen 5G network, allowing service providers to place small cell devices on publicly owned property to improve wireless networks, expediting local approval of small cell devices to improve wireless networks, such as my bill, SB 649, and that same proportion believe that small cell devices should not be subject to the same approval process as traditional large-scale towers. What this bill does, ladies and gentlemen, SB 649 balances the need to create certainty for small cell investment while still preserving the rights of local governments and reaffirming the policy that the right-of-way is for the benefit of all citizens to get important services. We've worked in close collaboration to address numerous concerns, including those of the chair, governance and finance committee staff, local government, and the cable industry. We greatly appreciate all the time you have spent with us to make this bill stronger, and we've reached good faith agreement on multiple amendments and a majority of issues. Since EUNC, in our committee, we have been and continue to be committed to ensuring SB 649 is technology neutral. Having spent 6 years in local government myself, I know how important it is to maintain local authority as guardians of the land use principle of time, manner, and use. But it's critical we don't solve one problem by creating another. If we set a build-out fee, if we set a build-out fee that is out of whack with other states and jurisdictions, the cumulative revenue collected will far short the cost of build-out delays and deferrals. And the ultimate victim of this will be the medium and smaller sized cities and less densified communities. So, we'll speak to the amendments, Mr. Chair, but I agree with the amendments. Just simply, this bill will chart a smarter and clearer path for wireless providers to invest hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, in our local communities to accommodate widespread community demand for the next generation of networks. And I ask for your support. We have Jesus Roman with Verizon here to speak on this bill, including Steve Carlson representing CTIA, the Wireless Association, as well as AT&T on the important benefits of this bill and the practical applications of the statute of this bill to the real world. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. We'll read out the amendments here in just a bit, but we'll turn it over, to the good folks over at Verizon. And what I'd like to be able to do, if it works for you, as we do for every presentation, 3 minutes, sir, and I'll give you a 30-second prompt.
Mr. Chair, if I may. My name is Jesus Roman. I'm an assistant general counsel with Verizon. And I wanted to focus my comments on why a fee that is connected to cost is important and reasonable. And currently the bill has it connected to a cost-based rate. Telecommunications companies currently, along with electric utilities currently, are required to provide access at regulated rates to their poles. Cable companies access those poles, and so do wireless carriers. The PUC has a formula that is based upon Public Utilities Code Section 767.5 that essentially is the percentage of the annual cost of ownership of the space occupied, and it's a per-foot cost. That cost establishes rates of $3 for Frontier, $7 for AT&T, and between $15 and $30 for the electric utilities. Everyone currently is attaching to utility poles in the right-of-way at those rates. This principle of a cost-based rate was extended to municipal publicly-owned utilities in the Buchanan bill, and you can currently find that same formula in Public Utilities Code Section 9512. And that one is also a percentage of the volume of the capacity of the pole rendered unusable. Now, it's important to talk about how the rate impacts the ability of wireless carriers to actually deploy the wireless facilities. Currently, a macro tower has about a 10-mile radius of coverage. A small cell has approximately a 1,500-foot radius of coverage. A 5G antenna will have a coverage of 300 feet, only 300 feet, and it's a line-of-sight coverage. Now, this is because new spectrum has been licensed out by the FCC. That spectrum is called millimeter wave, and it has a very short propagation trait. That propagation trait also degrades very quickly. So you're going to need a bunch more, a lot more 5G antennas in the right-of-way and probably 5 to 10 times the amount of small cells. So in order for us, the wireless carriers, to be able to economically deploy 5G, we need to have a rate that is based upon a cost structure. And if we don't have that ready, it'll be very difficult to actually deploy and get the benefits of 5G that Chairman Wessel talked about. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll go over to Mr. Carlson. Mr. Carlson, you have 3 minutes. We'll give you a 30-second prompt.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, members, Steve Carlson for CTIA. We're the Wireless Trade Association. I wanted to really thank you and your staff for the incredible amount of time that you have spent over the last couple of weeks, particularly in the last couple of days, including last night and this morning, in working on this issue, which is not uncomplicated. I wanted to run down for the members just a little bit of an idea of the amendments that have been taken since the bill was presented in the EU&C committee. We've tried to address issues of the chair, committee staff, members of the EU&C committee, issues raised by local government, issues raised by cable, among others. And I know we're going to go over the final set of amendments we talked about last night. We have looked at issues, making sure that the cities understood that encroachment permits were things that they could do under this process. Obviously, we wanted to move to a more streamlined process, that those permits were subject to feasible design and co-location standards. The issue of what they look like, we understand, is very, very important to local government, and we agree. And those are in the bill in numerous places. There were issues raised in EUNC on squatting, going on a pole and not using it in a time, not providing service. Those issues have been dealt with. Making sure that the building structural requirements under building codes are covered. Making sure that carriers pay their electric costs. Other issues in making sure that cities and counties could reserve spaces on their poles if they wanted to use those poles. That was an issue that came up in EUNC. We thought that was a right issue, and we agreed to do that. We've put several amendments in to try to address some of the issues that are raised by the cable industry. We may not have hit that on 100%, but we're looking at making sure this is technology neutral, making sure the issue with the franchise agreements are turned over by this. We're continuing to work with them, and we've reduced the size of the maximum size of the small cells that can go on a pole. In response to some issues raised by CSAC, we've taken out the issue of putting it on signage. We've dealt with the issue of the fact that they don't own or control all the poles and only pertains to those poles where they have some licensing agreements. We also have agreed to grandfather any existing agreements. Those are a number of things. There are some other things that obviously came about just more recently, but I wanted to give the committee members an idea of how much we have worked on this issue, how many amendments we have taken. I'm guessing there'll probably be a few more as we go down the pike, but we really wanted to, again, appreciate the committee and the staff for their patience and hard work on this. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Crosser. I appreciate that. Mr. Devine.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. I, too, want to echo the words of others for all who have worked hard on finding solutions to this legislation. And obviously we're here to support this legislation and the deployment of wireless infrastructure. One of the issues as we get into the complexity of this bill that we frequently overlook is why are we going through this whole exercise? And what this is really about is building advanced infrastructure that's going to serve your constituents, our customers, our local governments, and our local businesses throughout the state of California. You know, we spend a lot of time here in the legislature this year. In fact, some might argue that, as the chairman has just commented, that this really is the year of infrastructure in the legislature. You're spending time focused on transportation. You're focused on housing. You're focused on water. And who knows how many additional infrastructure issues you'll be tackling this year. 649 is about infrastructure, advanced information infrastructure. But unlike other infrastructure challenges facing California, the wireless industry is prepared to invest the billions of dollars to build the next generation networks. We're not here seeking a subsidy. We're not here seeking a tax break. What we are simply asking for is that we adopt and use the established and predictable permitting process that we've used for the last 100 years to install wireline communication services. Secondly, we're asking to access city infrastructure in the right-of-way, just as we access all other infrastructure in the right-of-way as well. You've already touched on the legislation that passed in 2011, sponsored by, authored by Assemblywoman, former Assemblywoman Joan Buchanan, dealing with municipal-owned utility poles. That established a precedent for access to those poles for the industry. We are seeking a similar framework in this legislation. Let me just close by saying this, Mr. Chairman. This is an extraordinary time in the acceleration of both technology and innovation, both here in California and around the world. We have the opportunity to build wireless networks that will enable an explosion of interconnected devices.
Wrong choice of words.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I withdraw the word. The promise of the Internet of Things, whether we're going to be talking about smart cities, smart homes, smart cars, smart schools, all of that innovation is being created in California, and we want to make that those services available in California. We need this infrastructure to achieve that end. So with these new capabilities and, frankly, the imagination of California entrepreneurs, who knows what's next? We would urge you to support this bill. Let's get to the business of building the next-gen networks. Let's work together to find solutions to the challenges pending. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much, Mr. Devine. I appreciate that. What we're going to do is we're going to open it up for any individual who would like to be able to speak in support. If you could just please state your first and last name along with your organization and your position on the bill, and we're in the support category. As individuals start queuing up who are in support, just a couple of housekeeping items. We will obviously have opposition here coming up shortly. We are going to have we'll have a special category today, concerns about the technology, and we'll invite Mr. McGavin to come speak after we do formal opposition. Ma'am, the floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, members, Roxanne Gould, representing both the Wireless Infrastructure Association as well as National Association of Women Business Owners, Sacramento Valley.
Thank you so much for being here.
Gary McDonald, Executive Director of Lighthouse Counseling and Family Resource Center in Placer County. We're in strong support. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down.
Dennis Albiani, on behalf of Trackphone Wireless, we support.
Thank you.
Nathan Alonzo, Vice President at the Fresno Chamber of Commerce. We are here in strong support.
Thanks for coming up.
Darcy Barnes, Sacramento Urban League. We support.
Thank you.
Nancy Chance, California Person-Centered Advocacy Partnership and Choices Person-Centered Services Executive Director, in strong support.
Thanks for being here.
Marty Amoto, CDCAN, California Disability Community Action Network, in support.
Thanks, Marty.
Les Shepard, representing the California Asian Pacific Islander Chamber of Commerce, in support.
Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, Brenda Palomino with Sprint and Strong Support.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Usha Mutchler on behalf of the California State Sheriff's Association and Support. Thank you,
Usha.
Charlie Boring with Frontier Communications. We're not opposed, but we have some amendments that we want to continue working with the author on, and we feel like we can get to that point. And so with that, we support.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here.
Linda Ng, OCA Sacramento Chapter, in support.
Thank you, Linda.
Good afternoon. Kim Reinhelder, Escaton Foundation, we support.
Thanks for coming.
Good afternoon. Susan Peterson-Lipper with T-Mobile in support.
Thanks, Susan.
Good afternoon. My name is Lucy Obad, representing APAPA. We support.
Thank you, Lucy.
Good afternoon. My name is Aziza Davis-Goins, representing the Sacramento Black Chamber of Commerce, in strong support.
We're grateful you're here.
Good afternoon. I'm Malachi Amen with the California Urban Partnership and strong support.
Thanks, Malachi.
Chris Smith with the Sacramento Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. We are here in strong support.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon. Donna Davis with Weave, and we support.
Thanks, Donna.
Hello. Phil McDougall with St. John's Program for Real Change. We strongly support.
Thanks, Phil.
Hello, Niall Mito with Hacker Lab Coworking and Makerspaces, and we strongly support.
Grateful you're here, sir. Thank you.
Nicholas Rothman, California State, NAACP, and strong support.
Thank you so much.
Lester Polisky with Impact Venture Capital, very strong support.
Thanks, Lester.
Chris Rosa on behalf of Silicon Valley Leadership Group, in support.
Thanks for hanging with us all day.
I'll be here all day. Yeah. Manny Tilio, National Association of Realtors Professionals. We strongly support. We definitely need this. Thank you.
Manny, thank you so much, sir. Grateful. I'd like to be able to see if we have anyone else in support. All right. We're going to ask those who just spoke in favor of the bill to please give up your seat, and then we're going to we have one more coming up for in support.
Sorry. Julian Canetti representing Sacramento Asian Chamber, Chamber of Commerce, in support.
Thank you so much. We're grateful. We're going to welcome individuals to be able to come forward. So just to be fair and equitable, we'll have one primary individual who will speak on behalf of the group, and then we'll have three others who will provide 3 minutes worth of testimony. So we'll have one primary who will share opposition, and then we'll have three individuals, just so we're fair, just as we did in this past, that will provide 3 minutes of 3 minutes of opposition. Just as we go, I just want to make sure that, as Mr. Carlson had brought forward additional amendments, just some quick housekeeping items, some additional amendments that are being brought forward here today. That the so we've gone from 28 cubic feet to 21 cubic feet. Discretionary approval for historic districts and coastal zones. We have a range of a tier to flat fees on an annual basis from $100 to $850 per small cell site adjusted for inflation. We have a subcommittee that will be established to work out details related to the range of tiered fees prior to the bill being heard on the floor. And then we're also going to have that subcommittee make up of myself, the chair of energy, along with one other additional individual. And I'm looking to my right with the guy with the new glasses who would potentially be able to serve on that, along with the appropriations chair and staff member from appropriations. That's in addition to the squatting, the structural electric costs, locals being out of preserved space, old technology being replaced by the industry, et cetera. So I just want to make sure we got those out there so that everyone is also in the loop. Please let us know who's going to be our primary, and we welcome you, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure. Ryan Verdugo here on behalf of the League of California Cities.
Nice to see
you, Ryan. If it's okay with the chair, I'd like to split my time with Mr. Masri, who's a subject matter expert on these issues.
Great. Thank you.
Good afternoon, chair, members of the committee. Ronnie Verdugo here on behalf of the League of California Cities and a coalition of local government stakeholders who are here in strong opposition to SB 649. While there have been discussions between us, yourself, and we really want to thank you and commend you and especially Anton as well for the tremendous work and the amount of time that you've put into listen to our concerns. We really want to thank you for that. Unfortunately, although there have been discussions, we don't feel like there's been collaboration between us and the industry on this particular measure. Aside from the process issues, and we're just seeing amendments today, from the very beginning when we first met with the industry, it's been pretty clear that the intent of this bill or this proposal is and always has been to essentially give private companies guaranteed access nearly for free to public infrastructure so that they can sell a private consumer product that has no public benefit. And contrary to the sponsor's claims, there hasn't been any real intent here to give locals any real discretion. The amendments that we've seen, for example, limit our ability to even require regularly scheduled maintenance or to ask for any additional information regarding the technology. There is no accountability level of service quality for the type of technology that's being installed. Those are obviously problematic for us. At the end of the day, local governments, cities, counties, have a duty to the public to protect the public right away. And we cannot just give that away so that a private company can sell their product. The lease revenue that local governments could potentially generate from through negotiations with the industry for installation of these cells can help pay for services like police, fire, or graffiti cleanup or whatever it may be, and it's a flexible revenue source. And as you know, in an era of limited revenue sources, we don't understand what the rationale would be for giving that away. All of these things, again, are subject to negotiation. Not every city across the state is going to charge $4,000 to get these installed in their jurisdiction. Again, that's the prerogative between the industry and those local governments. And so, it's hard for us to know exactly what we're testifying against. We don't know exactly what the impacts would be from these amendments. And at the end of the day, we feel like a vote for this bill is a vote to take money out of your own local communities, potentially. And so at this time, I'd like to defer the rest of my time to Mr. Masri with the American Planning Association.
Thank you, Chair Omar Masri. On behalf of the American Planning Association, we recognize that wireless communication services are an important part of our communities. But we also recognize the duty we have to our communities to plan appropriately for the physical infrastructure. It is possible for California cities and counties to work with cellular or other providers on well-designed broadband, including small cells. I know this because in prior roles, I've worked on hundreds of these approvals in both Northern California and SoCal. While small cell infrastructure isn't exactly the same as macro towers, we must all point out that they're uniquely challenging because they vary in size and require additional equipment, not include the definition. While we appreciate the language limiting the size, 21 cubic feet is still large, about the size of a refrigerator. The size limits also completely ignore the ability to pursue a major expansion of new cabinets on the sidewalk or pole height extensions of, say, 10 feet or antenna width expansions under a separate federal rule known as 6409 the minute a site is built if it doesn't include any safeguards initially, as this bill would do. As planners, we've seen carriers propose small cells with bulky equipment and noisy cooling fans literally 5 feet from bedroom windows on wooden poles. We've seen carriers propose small cells that feature 120-foot tall poles that may require aircraft warning lights in front yards or on downtown sidewalks. The language as proposed could allow this. We've seen carriers propose 14-inch wide cable trays serving small cells running over apartment building windows, including rent-controlled windows, and small cell cabinets or diesel generators in areas reserved for a small business or a resident roof deck. Whether on poles or a few feet from a bedroom window or right in front of a small business, or on top of a historic residential building in a commercial zone but outside of a district, it is important that we review issues of design, aesthetics, equipment noise, neighborhood compatibility, and historic preservation review. That review, coupled with local discretion, are what allow staff to work with carriers to find placement and equipment solutions that do work. As written, the language is not clear as to whether the city would retain any discretion, including for poles that the city owns. APA California continues to propose the bill be well-suited to require that the Office of Planning and Research develop a model ordinance looking at best practices from cities that have successfully deployed hundreds, if not thousands, of small cells already to give carriers the certainty they've said they're looking for, but also provide best practices, lease templates, and applications that speed deployment of well-designed broadband siting. We're coming off the heels of AB 57 last year. That bill was intended to speed up permitting and was touted to be the fix that would guarantee rapid deployment. Now we're here again asking jurisdictions to go even faster and have ultimately little say. We continue to question the need to rush this bill forward without meaningful review and collaborative processes that build upon existing successful relationships involving carriers and local governments statewide. For these reasons, APA California respectfully urges a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Both of you, appreciate you being here. Welcome and good afternoon, and thank you for your patience today.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, Julie Navoris on behalf of the Urban Counties of California. I'm also here representing CSAC and RCRC, the rural counties.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, the day went a little long for all of us.
Totally.
We're here to speak specifically. I'm here to speak specifically on the fee structure that has been proposed in the new amendments. We are strongly opposed to this new fee structure. It's a tiered structure, which would institute an unprecedented requirement that we lease a vertical infrastructure. This is, as Mr. Badugo said, this is a public infrastructure paid for by taxpayers, which would be required to lease to a private entity for a nominal fee, and the fee ranges from 100 to 850, and it's capped at 850. Mr. Chair, I believe we've told you in the past that we are strongly opposed to any cap on a fee. This doesn't recognize the differences amongst communities and resources. In some of the language that we've seen, there was also references to nodes and population basis. So because we haven't seen the language, we're still kind of struggling to wrap our hands around that. In addition, there's also a provision in the amendment that says once we've leased a pole or our vertical infrastructure, we have to make a finding. If we want to use that pole for other purposes, we have to make a public finding and pass a board resolution to request space on our own property. We just think that is just very disingenuous. That is our property. We believe we should have the right to that. If we're going to lease it, if that moves ahead, okay. But give us the opportunity to use our own property and our own infrastructure. Also, there is a pretty major loophole in the bill as far as it says outside the right-of-way they can use any property in the commercial industrial zone. We think that is too broad for us, and we would like to see that narrowed. So in closing, we think this is an unprecedented takeover of our property and our infrastructure and a basic removal of local control, and therefore we're opposed.
Thank you, and I appreciate you taking the time to be able to sit down with us as well. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, Carolyn McIntyre on behalf of the Cable and Telecommunications Association. We are here with a position of oppose unless amended. I do want to take the opportunity to thank the wireless industry for the efforts they have made to this point in drafts that we have seen that do attempt to address a few of the issues that we have raised. However, they do not completely cover the issues that we're concerned about. We still believe that the bill needs to be clarified that it does not apply to deployment of backhaul facilities. And as I have previously mentioned to some of you, that is in fact the facilities that ultimately these networks need to connect to get to the internet. We want to make sure that there is specific language that will exclude that from the bill, and we do not believe that that is clear. Also, we were asking for language initially to ensure that there would not be any effort to impose a franchise fee on an entity that was already paying a franchise fee for purposes of providing a particular service, in our case, a cable service. We continue to seek that amendment. However, we are somewhat concerned that the language that has been discussed here today with regards to the fee charged to attach to poles could ultimately result in a situation where we are, the cable industry, we're paying a franchise fee in order to be in the right-of-way to provide our cable service, and because we choose to potentially provide it through another technology, our micro-wireless cells that we also want to attach to poles, that now we're going to be doubly billed, having to pay 5% of our gross revenues to provide service in the local government right away and the cost associated with being on the poles. This would not be a problem for the wireless industry because the franchising law specifically excludes the wireless industry from having to pay the franchise fee. So we do want to make sure that as this language is actually developed dealing with the fees, that we don't end up in a situation where we're going to have to pay significant amounts of money twice to provide the same type of service that we're already providing.
Thank you, Ms. McIntyre. I appreciate it. So I just want to do a quick check. So we've had four speakers who that would have matched those who spoke in support. So we're going to invite all of those who has opposition to be able to please come to the mic. If you could please. I'm going to have all of those who are opposed to be able to come forward and just state your first and last name along with your position in your organization.
Mr. Chair and members, Greg Cook, representing Northern California Power Agency, and we are in opposition to the bill. With your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I would like to raise an issue that has not been discussed at all today. That issue specifically has to do with the role of the publicly owned electric utility. Northern California Power Agency represents each of the cities in Northern California, which provides, owns, and operates the electric system in its communities. We suggest an amendment to this legislation that would include, as part of the permitting process, the engagement of the electric utility in that permitting process. Why would we want to do this? Because, number one, we want to be sure that we ensure the reliability of our systems. Number two, we guarantee the integrity of our infrastructure, those poles, and most important, the safety of the public in general and any individual who may be accessing those poles for service. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
No, thank you, sir, and I'm grateful you're here. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman, David Jones, on behalf of the cities of Burbank, Glendale, Marin County cities, Murrieta, Pasadena, and San Marcos in opposition.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Cyrus Stevers, representing the Protect Our Local Streets Coalition. We're opposed to the bill, but may also say we're also equally opposed to attempts to prevent 5G deployment. That's not our purpose. Thank you.
No, thank you, Cyrus.
I ask for your indulgence to, I'm here to represent Mother Earth. I'm lobbying in her behalf. I urge you not to shoot yourselves and our democracy into the other foot by adopting SB 649 as an advocational three decades long secondary researcher on the subject of EMFs and electromagnetic radiation, which includes health and environmental effects and the big brother aspects of the technology advocated here today. This is including especially 5G. I wholeheartedly oppose this bill and the elimination of the city and state's rights that it implies. And if you put these things on the telephone poles, you're going to kill all the trees.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your words today. Thank you.
Good afternoon again, Good afternoon. Mr. Chair. Karen Lang, on behalf of the City and County of San Francisco, which does already have hundreds of small cell sites.
Yes, you're good.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
San Francisco, Kern, Stanislaus, and San Luis Obispo, all in opposition today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. Matt Kloppenstein on behalf of the Association of Environmental Professionals, the County of San Mateo, and the County of Sacramento, all in opposition.
Thanks, Matt. Mr. Lehman from the great city of Novato, sir. It's good to see you always.
Nice to see you, Mr. Chair. Hey. Senators. My name is Harry Lehman from Novato, California. I come here today to speak within 1 minute in opposition to this bill on several reasons. There are good reasons put forth with regard to the information density. I'm sure Senator Hertzberg has been on that issue. I'm sure you all are. There's a lot to think through here. But in addition to that, there's an underlying 14th Amendment issue here, a due process issue, and that has to do with the notice upon which this process was noticed. It was imperfect notice because two state agencies put out differing information on the 21st. One saying that this was still on hold, the other saying, but not publicized, that it was going forward. The internet version of a state agency said that it was still on hold. Therefore, people were impaired in their ability to come forward. So I think that there's an underlying legal issue that you want to take a look at here. I think it's important that you take a look at the results of the National Institutes of Health's study released on May 27, 2016, which definitively established that the cancers of glioma and the cancer that causes acoustic neuroma, the first causing glioblastoma, which is brain cancer, is clearly caused by these wavelengths. It's no longer a matter of some fringe, balloonist hippie shit. This is real, definite, well-documented. Check it out. I oppose this. I think McGavin here has got a lot of good technical stuff. But frankly, on the basis of scientific position and without zealotry or emotion, you could call this the California Genocide Bill and be right in tune with what you're actually doing in terms of what the science from the National Institutes of Health has now shown May 27th, 2016, and you got a serious notice problem here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lehman. I'm grateful you're here. Thank you, sir.
Jordan Ellison with Ellison Wilson Advocacy on behalf of the cities of Inglewood, La Cañada, Flint Ridge, El Centro, and Santee in opposition.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gil Topete with the California Municipal Utilities Association. For the reasons of reliability, liability, and the health and safety issue components, we are in opposition.
Thank you, Gil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Andrew Antwi with Shaw Yoder Antwi. We will take a look at the amendments that have been discussed today, but for today's purposes, I'm here to express opposition from the cities of Santa Monica and Beverly Hills.
Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Paul Gonzalez representing the cities of Roseville, Thousand Oaks, Indian Wells, Camarillo, Claremont, Laguna Hills, Diamond Bar, Torrance, Rancho Cucamonga, Eastvale, Palmdale, Lakewood, and La Quinta. We, too, will take a look at the amendments, appreciate the senator and his work, but as of now, we are still opposed. Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon.
Laura Parr on behalf of the City of Long Beach. We currently have an opposed unless amended position, and we will be reviewing those amendments and get back to the author. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your engagement.
Ignacio Hernandez on behalf of the Utility Reform Network, our turn, and we are opposed, and we will be reviewing the amendments as well.
Thank you so much, Ignacio. Hi.
Hello. Sharon Gonzalez on behalf of the cities of San Leandro, Hayward, and Tulare in opposition.
Thank you, Sharon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Anthony Sampson on behalf of the Southern California Public Power Authority in opposition.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Elizabeth Espinosa here today on behalf of the Board of Supervisors in the County of Santa Clara in opposition to the bill in print. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman and members, James Jack on behalf of Caltel. We don't have an opposed position, but I wasn't sure it was going to be appropriate for us to testify with the group that is assembled for the third category. I just wanted to state that we've been working and appreciate the author made a commitment in Energy Committee to address concerns we have about the bill being technologically neutral, that is, favoring wireless technology over wireline technology. We continue to work in good faith and appreciate the author's continued work in that.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Mr. Jack. Good afternoon.
Hello, Honorable Hi. Chair McGuire. My name is Renette Senham, and I'm a current city council member, former mayor of Nevada City, California. I generally don't come down here, but I've never seen a bill scare me so much, so I spent the whole day here. And this is why. This is not about a streamlining process. I'm sorry, it's not. This is nothing short of the telecommunication industry basically hijacking and a hostile takeover of our local government of city and counties. As a city council member, I have never seen such legislation that will remove local authority and also risk property rights, as well as hacking, right, of our internet and important systems. We will also be losing self-determination, and this is the most extraordinary, dangerous, precedent-setting legislation I have ever seen, because you're basically taking the control out of our hands. We can no longer self-determine our future. The last thing I'd like to speak of is I keep being told that this is what the customers want. This is what the customers want. The customers want faster download. They don't want 5G. They don't know what 5G is. They don't know what the Internet of Things is. So I implore you, slow down this train. Please, for the sake of your grandchildren, slow it down. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman.
My name is Barbara Daly. I'm from the public. And I couldn't say it any better than this lady or the lady on behalf of Mother Nature. This bill scares me. That's why I've been here all day. And I have to speak up for your mothers, your fathers, your children, and everybody in this room who has a great job. But this isn't going to help their health. And I know there's some people here that are going to testify about the problems with the health. And it's going to kill our bees. We won't have oxygen from our trees. I don't know that you want this on your hands. Please, don't do this. Use fiber optics. It's a better way. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we appreciate you hanging with us. Thank you. All right. Do we have anyone else in opposition that would like to be able to come forward? I know. In just one moment. Is there anyone else in opposition prior to getting to Mr. McGavin that would like to be able to speak? All right. So, again, please come up, gentlemen. We're grateful both of you are here. So as we talked about, we'll have the three categories, those in support, those who are opposed, and those who have concerns about the technology. Mr. McGavin will be speaking here today in regards to the concerns about the technology, along with Mr. Graham, in regards to their concerns. Gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and we welcome you.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Mark Graham, and I represent Scientists for Wired Technology. I only drove 45 minutes to get here, but I have been waiting here since 8:30.
Thank you so much.
Certainly. In the science marches across the country this past weekend, one sign read, "At the start of every disaster movie is a scientist being ignored." SB 649 is a disaster movie. It would bring cell tower antennas from where they are currently placed, 200 feet in the air and thousands of feet from homes, to only 20 feet in the air and 20 feet from homes. This will create a public health nightmare with a wide range of short-term and long-term health impacts. Please don't ignore our best scientists. Small cell radiation is pulsed, modulated radio frequency microwave radiation. I will call it RFR for short. In December 2014, a California Medical Association resolution stated that peer-reviewed scientific evidence demonstrates adverse biological effects of RFR, including immune system dysfunction, altered brain development, sleep and memory disturbances, sperm dysfunction, heart damage, and brain tumors. In May 2016, Dr. Ronald Melnick, the lead designer of the National Toxicology Program's 16-year, $25 million study on the cancer-causing properties of cell phone RFR, said that the hypothesis that RFR causes health effects has now been proved. We saw increases of gliomas, brain cancers, and schwannomas of the heart. The same cells that became cancerous in rats are the cells that have been reported to develop into tumors in humans. In other words, the United States government says cell phone radiation causes heart cancer and brain cancer. The committee should reject this bill because RFR is hazardous to human health. It penetrates the brain, the heart, and the reproductive organs, causing injury to all of them. It also causes early dementia for people in their 40s and 50s. This bill will create chronic health problems for millions of Californians every day. Imagine if you cannot sleep in your home, you have a pounding migraine headache and ringing in your ears because of radiation from the small cell. You can't function at work or at school the next day. The committee should require the bill's author, to my right, to prove that as they will be installed and operated, these small cells will not create a public health hazard. Californians need that assurance before you vote on this bill today. DDT, the pesticide, Vioxx, and tobacco are all products that were once claimed to be safe, but were known by industry at the time to be hazardous. Here we go again. The best reason a local government could have for saying no to small cells is to protect the health and safety of their residents. The bill would violate Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution, which guarantees our inalienable right to pursuing and obtaining safety, happiness, and privacy. Federal RFR guidelines do not protect against health hazards, as the flyer I delivered to your office on Friday proves. Please don't ignore the scientists. Don't create a public health disaster. Thank you, Senators.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Very quickly, sir.
Thank you. Yes, just one sentence on each of the materials, just as explanation.
Thank you, sir.
This was part of a measurement in Palo Alto, California, where there are 4G cells, and they're operating today. The key thing to understand is that 250,000 units of radiation is what the Soviets beamed at the U.S. Embassy from 53 to 78, causing brain cancer among three ambassadors, miscarriages, and many health impacts that are widely known and published in the public record. We are finding on these sidewalks 3 to 5 times higher amounts of radiation right where people stand and walk on the sidewalks. We measured 10 of them, and we have them all summarized on a website, which unfortunately is down right now from a DDoS attack. We wonder why. So what we're trying to share with everyone is, please, just make sure that we pay attention to this information that was emailed to you.
I want to make sure you get to all your so if you want to show the other one, please.
This is showing you 35 cubic feet. According to the bill as it was originally written, it was said the cabinets could be as large as 35 cubic feet or 28, depending on whether pole or non-pole structure. We tried to bring this demo in, but this is something to show you how large that is. That's the size of a refrigerator next to every pole and non-pole structure. With the amendments we just saw, maybe that's getting smaller. That's a good idea. But what we wanted to do is really show that it is not a pizza box. It is actually a pizza box plus a refrigerator. Now, a pizza box is this. Senator Hueso said last meeting that it is a small pizza box. Well, we did the math, okay? The antenna they brought last time is actually 60 of these small pizza boxes. And if we give them an extra large, it's 30 of them. Okay? 6 cubic feet is not a pizza box. Okay? So thank you. Finally, these are binders that represent over 110 studies that have been in the public record since July 15, 2015. There's video evidence of putting binders exactly this color into the public record handed to Senator Hernandez and Senator Hertzberg in that meeting. This went into cold storage. No one, A, looked at it, B, reviewed it, paid a consultant to look at it, evaluate it, and even the table of contents for this, which was given to the consultant for this bill, was completely left out of the analysis.
We're going to have you wrap up.
Thank you very much for allowing us to show these. Absolutely. In support of Mr. Graham's wonderful comments.
No. To both of you, thank you. And I know it's been a long day, so thanks so much for hanging with us as well.
Thank you so much for your time yesterday when we went through the basics of microwave radiation sickness, which is what people are. I have here, which I can't show you, video from 11 people who couldn't actually make it into the building. Their civil rights are being violated because you have Wi-Fi here 24/7. If you turn the Wi-Fi off, they could actually participate in the process. We do have them on video, and we're welcome to share them with you. We'll be sending them to you by email.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
We would be glad to answer any questions or provide additional information if any senator needs it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
All right. Appreciate the testimony. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring it back to committee for discussion. Who would like to be able to kick us off? All right. Sir Hertzberg.
A lot of information in that testimony. Thanks, everybody. And I just, Mr. Chair, both Mr. Chairs, because I sat through your committee, Mr. Hueso, and was informed by literally almost all the members as we began to go through this process of a lot of concerns. And you correctly noted, Mr. Hueso, that the chair of this committee spent just an extraordinary amount of time addressing those kinds of issues that on a bipartisan basis were of concern. You know, this is an interesting, I certainly support the amendments that are here today. I'm happy that you've done that in reaching some level of an agreement. I just want to make a couple of observations and then have a couple of questions. You know, look, this is one of these things. You know, I got a guy sitting next to me who you can agree or disagree, but he just wrote a bill that brought billions of dollars to all these cities that are on these lists that are complaining. I used to chair this committee, and what you get is all these cities that when you tell them you got to do something, they don't want to hear it. But I would love to see how many cities are going to reject the money that we just gave them to fix their roads and fix their potholes. What happens in this tension that exists between state and federal government? We see it in the creation of the railroads, some challenges, creation of the highway system and annexing property and eminent domaining property, of creating air pollution districts, that there's a balance of issues of statewide concern against issues of local concern. It informs so much of that dynamic. And, you know, I always hear the league here, and they'll always tell you they support everything when you give them something, and they're consistent by telling them we're taking something away. But, you know, the reality is they want the benefits of these systems. How many 911 calls are made in a wireless context? How many 311 calls are made in a wireless context? How many people benefit in so many ways? And so what you've got here going on, I saw this as a result of being out of government for a while, and I remember Mo Ibrahim in Rwanda, you know, builds a system, and I got better cell reception in Rwanda than I ever get here. Why? Because you've got local government that makes local decisions based upon politics, and you have this really different challenge. So what's happening here is I understand this measure, Mr. Hueso, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this only deals with right-of-ways, that if a city wants to charge whatever they want to charge to put a tower in a park, they can negotiate in any way they want to negotiate, right? But that the right-of-ways are the arteries of commerce. They're the arteries that connect us all together, that you can pick up the phone and call somebody or drive on a highway or whatever. The whole reason the original Railroad Commission, now the Public Utilities Commission that I always give a hard time to in your committee, sir, is basically the balance between the statewide interest in these matters and the local issues. So, you know, the notion of the speed to market, this is a really significant problem that we all face, in my judgment, in this job. Because society is moving at breakneck speed. I don't know how many people here have these fancy phones with all the fancy devices and apps or watch movies or do all the other things on them because they want the benefits of this stuff. I call it the Diet Coke Society. You want infrastructure without the taxes. You want all the benefits. You want the calories. You want the taste without the calories, right? You can get that in my book, by the way. And that's what it is. It's a Diet Coke Society. And so what we're trying to do here on a global basis, as I see it, is deal with these very significant challenges of what these new technologies offer to piggyback on this stuff and to try to make it work. And what I saw in your committee were a lot of questions that were raised, and literally every one that I observed, because I sat through your full hearing, except for this health issue that's being raised and was raised last year when I chaired this committee with respect to Assemblymember Quirk's measure, are being raised by this. So my big picture observations is the world is moving faster. My big picture operations is the Diet Coke Society, the benefits without the burden. My big picture observation is in crafting public policy, which you're doing here so importantly, is a place for balancing those things. I mean, look at air pollution. Look at roads. You know, think about, you can go look in the history books and talk with the people who are complaining about all those cars were registered by us at the state so that people get the benefit of cars in their communities. And so I look at this as kind of the larger dynamic in that sense. So I really do appreciate the efforts you've made, Mr. Chairman, in that regard. I do think that you've dramatically addressed the issue of the Energy Committee. And, you know, and I don't disregard, and I did not look at those books that you gave me, because I read everything, the gentleman who gave me those books last year, at those studies. And look, you know, there have been through society all sorts of times when we make decisions and technology, we see these things change and the like. But we make balances. We have automobiles. There was 38,000 deaths in society last year. People dead. Dead because of cars, not just injured, but we say there's a value to having an automobile, and we make these public policy decisions, you know, in terms of those balances. So I give you a great deal of credit for this, and I appreciate the work that you've put into this. In this document you gave, Mr. Carlson, 23 amendments is pretty good. I mean, I've never seen you do that before. I think it's a great idea for the future. Whoever does that, that's excellent in terms of that level of work. So I do appreciate it. I do think that it's certainly a cities to me the costs here, because what Mr. McGuire was trying to reach here was trying to make sure that the public was protected. You do have, I think, just a couple more points. I apologize, but I think it's really important to reiterate private sector investment. He's got billions of dollars. He did in L.A. County. We had raised taxes, and all around the state raises taxes to pay for further infrastructure. We had homeless issues paying for stuff. So there is a lot of investment, and this is kind of cool because it's private sector money. Shareholders risk it. If it doesn't work, they lose the money. There's no taxpayer risk to provide the benefit to society that there really is a demand. There is a demand for. So I just wanted to address those issues in a big picture. And I do think in the context of coastal zones, in the context, as the chairman did, of historical zones, there still is discretionary approval. There was a limitation, basically, of a size that and a design that says these are going to be ministerial in order to expedite these things at a quicker basis. So, I don't know, sir. I really give you and the chairman just an extraordinary amount of credit to deal with an extremely complex issue. So I apologize for going on so long, but I think that this is a really important issue, and it has so much more dimension than just small issues that are before us in terms of the role of states versus locals, and an honorable discussion about how we go forward in this globalizing, fast-paced society that we're living in. And I think you're touching it pretty well, sir. So thank you so much. And there was a question there somewhere. I'm sure you'll figure it out.
Thank you so much, Senator Hertzberg. Thank you. Mr. Bell.
Well, I appreciate the amendments. I had some questions. When I look at the amendments and they deal with the rights of the city government to review the design of these devices that you're going to place on the poles, can you describe what the rights in terms of design review, what the design review process would be, how they would go about, you know, what would there be a submittal of a bundle of applications for various specific sites and then exact locations for each device? And then what's the process for the city to review that?
Since I'm not in the industry, I will defer to the specific process cities have followed in the past, but I imagine that based on some information that I've received from the industry, demand will be measured in terms of where subscriptions take place, and that can be some areas maybe more heavily subscribed than others, and that'll be on an highest demand first approach, where they'll submit kind of a bundle for a certain area. And because there is a ministerial process, largely the ministerial process ensures public safety. And if there are any design guidelines within a local municipality, that those installations conform to that. So I've been through the ministerial process. It's not simple. But it is much easier than discretionary. I'll give you that. So in attempting to do that, we're ensuring that there is some level of streamlining through this process. But there is within the ministerial process a review of safety, public safety, and every jurisdiction tends to have design guidelines. But if the industry, anybody in the industry wants to weigh into that.
I was just going to jump in here. I'm not going to talk about where the industry is going to go in regards to their process, but just adding on to where the chairman was. This bill does allow for terms and conditions to be initiated in regards to the feasible design standards of a local government, as well as co-location, as well. So that is actually within the bill. In addition, we take it out of the ministerial process for designated historical zones. So if there's a historical zone that's whether it's San Jose or within the city of San Rafael, it will go back into the what we already have is within the shot clock system. And the same thing with coastal zones because of the sensitivity, particularly, as we all know, when you're working with the Coastal Commission and in those sensitive environments. So there's really two types that's embedded within this legislation now that's been enhanced. You know, again, there's certain conditions that cities can place in regards to the ministerial, and under the discretionary, it will still remain in a public process.
Through the chair, I believe in working with Anton, we have removed the term ministerial from the bill, and we're talking just about permitting processes and what other permits can be required under those processes.
Okay, that's why I asked the question. Can you tell me what the process would be?
So if I may, Chair, please.
I'm a city council member. You know, I was for 14 years, so I...
By blood.
Yeah, so I got this application from your company. Who do you give it to? How does it work under this law?
So
as written with the amendments.
So generally speaking, the way the permitting process works is there is an application process. That application process details what you have to put in the application, either for an encroachment permit or for a building permit.
Right.
And within the context of the guidelines that the cities provide for what you're going to put in your application, you can put in the feasible and reasonable design standards that have been put into the bill. So could it be like
I don't like anything that conflicts with the architectural nature of a particular street?
So, for example, there's like a decorative pole.
I have a certain type of pole that I spent a lot of money putting in to retain a neighborhood business district or a particular type of neighborhood.
Right. So if you have a decorative pole, for example.
Yes.
In a particular place.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Right. So the guidelines could say the facilities that you will install, carrier, cannot change the character of the pole.
All right.
For example. And that's something that we would have to follow.
How about blocking light? Like, can they say, whatever you do, we don't want to block light for somebody walking on the sidewalk or the something like that.
That would be part of it.
You can
there's
put
also
those kinds of design guidelines in the
yes,
and they can adjust them based on a particular area.
Yes, and in addition to that, there's time, place, and manner. There's specific reference to 7901, 791.1 about time, place, and manner restrictions, or authority for local government.
And then
correct.
Hanging over a street right-of-way versus they could say we don't want it to hang over the street right-of-way.
So I just want to
design standards that say something like that. I'm just asking you.
So there's
giving you some things that you're going to have to deal with. So
right.
You.
So
hanging over the street right-of-way. You know, the public work people freak out when you try to put something that they don't control. That hangs over the street right away. I'll just tell you that right now.
So on this one.
So let's answer that one.
Yeah. So the answer is yes. You can.
They can say that.
Because the language actually says the local government will have the authority to have feasible design and co-location standards. The co-location standards is what gives you the outer authority.
All right. Okay. I'm just asking these questions because I know the city council members and the communities are going to talk about this. And so we do have control in the cities over design standards, and they can get fairly specific with those design standards. And as long as they have a guideline, so when you walk in the door, you apply for the permit, and you will receive a set of design guidelines that that city developed for their community, and they will say, here's the design guidelines. You have to follow those guidelines. And it could be different than the city next to you.
Yes.
Is that right?
So that's right, but I want to caveat that with the...
Okay, let's hear it.
The caveat is they have to be feasible design standards that won't prevent the installation of a small cell.
So if you don't like their design guidelines, who do you complain to? You say it's not feasible. Where do you go? The courts? Who makes the decision?
So I'll speak for Verizon.
No.
We're going to go talk to the city, right? We're going to talk, and you know, but the law would probably allow someone to go to the courts if they wanted to.
All right. So it's some liability if the city, there's some kind of court process if the city does not like, if you have a dispute, if you want to say it that way.
Yeah, so I doubt we'll get there. I'm a lawyer, and I'll say, you know, you can pretty much
planner.
You can pretty much go to court for any reason,
but
that's not going to happen.
So I'm trying to, you know, when I heard the response from the planning people, it sounded like they were very concerned about, you know, those kinds of things, because I think that's when it comes down to it. Those are the kind of things that you're going to find your public works, your planning departments and so forth are going to be concerned about. And it seems like the amendments that you put in here have some reflection of that concern. Is that correct? That's why you added that?
Yes. And we're, again, responding to the concerns. But just if I can just add to what he already said.
Yeah.
And we all know as legislators, absence of legislation usually leads to lawsuits as much as the creation of legislation leads to lawsuits. So, I mean, there's no guarantees.
And if you're in a historical district or something like that, that's very sensitive topic also. Yeah. You put that in the bill as well.
So under the historical, it's not even in, if you will, an over-the-counter permit. It goes back into what we already have under AB 57, which was the court bill that puts it back into the public realm.
Right. Can you kind of describe what the grandfather existing agreements? Is that a complete grandfather, partial grandfather of agreements between cities? How would that work?
Generally, an agreement is a contract that has been executed between a provider and the municipal government. Whatever they are and however they stand, the bill respects them in their entirety until those contracts come to an end. And then, this legislation kicks in at that point.
Okay. All right. Can you tell me what the range of tiered or flat fees is based on? Is it based on the size of the unit, or is there any kind of criteria that it was based on?
Well, that's what we're going to attempt to negotiate in this next process, and the idea is to bring it within a practicable or a workable range, something that does not preclude the program from unfolding. We have just already lots of guiding principles in the state already that we're not – that can serve as a guide for us to establish that rate. We have some PUC decisions that established pricing in the in the for-profit realm. So if, for example, if you're AT&T and you own a pole and Verizon wants to use it under a PUC rule, they cannot preclude you from using it, and the usage fee is determined on how much of the cost of the loss of use of that pole is to the provider, and they actually come up with a very specific language. That's already a guiding principle in us establishing a fee. So there was also a Buchanan bill that kind of added a little more clarity to that. That is also a guiding principle in establishing that fee. But we're also looking at the fact that this is a new technology that will require more placement locations that will substantially that would create substantial costs. If you add a very excessive cost to each location, you could pretty much make the program infeasible depending on the amount of users that you can have. So, you know, we want on the one hand, we want to help, much like, you know, government often comes in and helps to spur investment. We want to help the companies give some kind of certainty that should they make a big investment, they'll be able to derive the revenues from the customer base to make this work. And that's a very tricky model when we're trying to come up with what that number is. So we're going to be working with the chair. We're going to be working with the chair of appropriations. We're going to be working with Chairman Hertzberg. All the chairmen are going to get together and go over what is that appropriate amount that, you know, I have to say everyone is going to benefit from this. The cities are going to benefit from this. The people in the community are going to benefit from this. It's going to create a lot of jobs and a lot of investment. We just have to find
that appropriate. I'm asking a question about the fees specifically here. So I'm asking a lot of these questions on the land use because this didn't go through the Transportation Development Committee. So, and I'm the chairman of that, and that deals with land use. I'm just pointing that out. So, you know, you didn't go through that the committee that deals with the land use planning stuff. So, and, you know, and I'm on appropriations, so I'm going to bring it up there, too. So I would like to know about the fees and more detail. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm a believer in what we call Moore's Law. You know what Moore's Law is? It's a semiconductor.
Every 18 months.
And so, like, every few years, everything gets smaller. So if we have a fee that incentivizes these devices to be smaller, that would be a good policy for the state to have.
Oh, wow. That's
okay, so I think... Moore's Law should be
where
applied
been,
to this. These big
life?
Old things like this, like the guy, where's your picture, sir? His big picture. You know, we can make Moore's Law a policy on the fees and on the devices over time for 5G be smaller and smaller. We don't, that's like 1960s computer size, IBM 360. With the cards, and then now we're going to floppy disks, and now we're getting smaller, and now we're down to this, and then we're going to get even smaller. That's Moore's Law. So, president of Intel,
yeah, I love it.
And I think we ought to apply Moore's Law, Mr. Chairman, to these to encourage smaller and smaller and smaller. So we reward companies that design and put install smaller and smaller devices over time. I think that's important.
That's great.
I would, you know, when we're going to deal with the fees and the design of facilities here. So if you could, in the work group between now and appropriations, apply Moore's Law, I would think that would be appropriate on this case.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bell. I've added that to our list as well, and I'll talk about that in just a bit. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate all your feedback in putting that hat on as a planner as well. It's very helpful. Thank you. We'll go to Mr. Morlock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Last night I presented a bill that involved Orange Coast College, and one of their board members had told me that a phrase his father used to say was that that he was not opposed to progress. It was change he hated. So I want to thank you for all your hard work, Mr. Chair. I know you've been working hard because we were texting late this morning. We were texting this morning, so. And so I want to thank you for keeping me updated through the process. So I want to encourage progress, but it's the change that I'm concerned about. So we don't want to cram something down to our locals, and I'm wondering, you've got item 5, subcommittee will be established to work out details related to the range of tiered fees prior to the bill being heard on the floor. Number 6, subcommittee makeup of these individuals. So who are you working these details out with?
No, thank you so much. So what the intent will be is that through the 4 members, we are not intentionally going to have carriers there or local government there because we don't want to bias. But what I will assure you is that we are going to be keeping this committee up to date on where we're at, because that was a commitment of mine from the very beginning. And as we continue to move forward through this process, we're going to be keeping local government as well as those carriers in the loop as well on progress. As we have all along, as we've been in negotiation since whenever Energy Committee was a few weeks ago.
I'm not understanding it. So you're going to just talk amongst the 4?
Correct.
And you're going to just kind of assume what cities want?
No, not at all.
And you're going to assume what the proper protocol is? Or
I never would assume, and I have to say, throughout this process, we have had a significant opportunity to be able to sit down with all sides of this bill to be able to get significant feedback. And that's candidly my style, and I know that it could be painful at times for those who are involved, but I think it's really important that we continue to keep an open door to everyone. And I assure you that is going to continue to advance as we discuss this here in the next few weeks.
So there's got to be a sweet spot that we're all shooting for. So you can't charge $2,000 a pole every year plus inflation.
I don't know. That's where I was at.
Otherwise, the industry.
There you go.
The industry says, "Forget it." Right? You know. So there's this balance. So I'm trying to figure out how do we know if locals aren't represented, or unless you're just saying, "Hey, because I used to be a supervisor, therefore I understand."
Can I add something here?
Please.
I don't think that's really. I mean, it's not that formal. I mean, basically, what happens. One of the great challenges, and you certainly have heard me bellyache about this a lot, is the way the process works. Often we'll have a bill that has a blank in it or whatever the case may be, and we simply articulate that this is a work in progress and we'll continue to work with the folks to move forward as the process goes forward. I think basically that's what's happening here, except there's some parameters on it. Parameter number one is there's some framework, at least as the opener, as to what the ranges are going to be that are talked about, rather than just leaving it blank. This bill goes to appropriations, so appropriations is going to take whatever action there's there, and that's why the idea is to basically, as if the author is saying, I will work with the Appropriations Committee chair, and most importantly, what the author is saying by accepting these amendments is that because I know that this is a work in progress, I'm not going to go and put this on the floor until we can get some level of agreement with the committee, you know. The committee chair is dragging me in as the former committee chair to give me extra work because I got nothing else to do and to help out. But other than that, it's basically the author and to work with the appropriations chair, which is the next committee, which is basically always what happens. So it's really not any kind of committee or subcommittee. It's just a commitment with some parameters around it by the chair that says, I won't take this up on the floor. Like, if you recall what I did to the chairman of this committee on the
thanks, Hertzie.
This for the idea. I'm still limping from that one.
So thank you so much.
B&B bill, if you remember that.
I'm starting to get shakes.
So it's the same kind of thing. So that's all it is, in essence. It's not that formal of a process, but an effort of a commitment by the author to really engage and understand of all the work that's been done. It's been set forth here, the 23 amendments. There's still a little bit of homework to done before this comes to the floor, and a commitment by the author. I think that's a better way to say it. It's really not anything more than that, except what Hernandez offers in his opening comments.
In the process, frankly, works, right? It holds all of us accountable, and you will not. There will be a compromise by all sides before it hits the floor through this process.
The author of the bill has done a great job of getting long lists, both support and oppose. So, congratulations. I've got to sort of watch that oppose list sort of narrow down. That would be my barometer you're getting closer to the sweet spot. Okay. I was just curious, because I've dealt with this in a previous life, and I'm just curious, are we running out of polls? I mean, we got the gas company that wants a smart meter on one pole to radio tower to read all the smart meters in the 500 feet or whatever jurisdiction. And so you got all these poles that are being taken up.
I think that's the issue. I think the issue is how to best use those poles.
Yeah. I mean, you can only put one transmitter on one pole, right?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
But the cities have the control.
Yeah, well, then that gets us back to the local level. Yeah. So then we got to find that sweet spot. All right.
Yep.
Good luck. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much.
I didn't use words like bandwidth and signals.
Absolutely. All right, so we have a motion on the floor, and I'm just going to say a few items before we move and take formal action. Number one, I want to take a moment to say thank you to the Chair of Energy for all of his due diligence as we move forward. I think it was important from the feedback that we received from Energy, and this was the mission of the Chair of Energy all along, to focus on those significant issues that were brought forward from the committee. And I think that any time that we have a large bill like this that's moving forward, it is difficult, candidly, to be able to drive consensus. But I think where we started to where we're at now, we have made significant advancement to be able to not only preserve, and it's not going to be to the pleasure of everyone, as to preserve local control, to be able to expedite technology, and to keep a funding source in place. And I think that it's important to also note that this bill does not touch, for example, if want to be able to put up a tower on a light standard in a park, for example. That is excluded from this bill. And I know in my hometown, we depend on that revenue for Little League and Pop Warner football. But that is outside of the city right away, and I just want to make sure that is important to note, because we've heard feedback on that. The other piece is I want to say thank you to the chair, because it does move in the right direction in the spirit of the feedback of the committee. What some of the potential proposals could be, in addition to where the chairman of Energy had mentioned in regards to the tiering, we can also take a look, and we've been talking about a lot about this, right? Talking about tiering when it comes to population, talking about tiering when it comes to sites. So X percentage of sites get one price, and the additional tiers receive a second, but that's something that we'll need to work out in this very informal process that will be advanced. So, I want to say thank you so much to the chair. I want to say thank you to all the stakeholders. There have been a lot of meetings and a lot of late night meetings as well, truly. We didn't get out of here till about 11 o'clock last night. Special thank you to Senator Hertzberg, in addition to the chair of Energy, for all the work. To the gentleman to my left, Anton. Thank you, sir, because you have been spending his fiance is a little upset, but I do appreciate all the work that went in.
You can go with Ben Weso's fiance to that oil museum.
You missed that.
Good times. There we go. So in addition to Okay, there we go. To the amendments that are being brought forward, I want to just repeat on what we're advancing here today. So number one is the encroachment. The motion is, in addition to the amendments that have already been moved, number one, encroachment permit process or equivalent for small cell sites under 21 cubic feet and that meet local conditions for design and co-location standards. Number two, discretionary approval for historic districts and coastal zones. Number three, a range of tiered or flat fees on annual basis ranging from 100 to 850 per small site. Annually adjusted for inflation. Number four, grandfathering existing agreements between cities and carriers subject to termination clauses in those agreements. Number five, subcommittee will be, an informal working group will be established to work out details related to the range of tiered fees prior to the bill being heard on the floor. And that informal working group makeup will be myself, Senator Hertzberg, the appropriations chair and the chair of energy and one staff member potentially also from appropriations. Mr. Chair, I just want to confirm those are your amendments.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Closing statement, sir.
I'll just use my closing statement just to clarify there is no shotgun wedding. I'm not getting married, Senator. Generally, I just want to use my closing statements to express my gratitude to the chair, to staff, members, and of course to my staff that has been working very hard on this as well. Thank you very much for allowing me to move forward in this important measure, and I'm very excited to continue to work on this. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
No, thank you so much, sir. So this is a due pass as amended to appropriations. Let's do a roll call vote, please. Ms. Lanchester.
McGuire.
Aye.
McGuire, aye. Wynn.
Aye.
Wynn, aye. Bell.
Aye.
Bell, aye. Hernandez.
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Hertzberg.
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Lara. Morlock.
Aye.
Morlock, aye.
We have 6-0.
All right, that's 6-0. We're going to keep the roll open. And thank you so much, Mr. Weisel, for all your work. And a special thank you to Nydia for all of your work, too, ma'am. Thank you from Energy Committee.